Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and your column on federalnewsradio.com titled Disability Retirement Avoided If You Can has apparently resonated with a lot of people.
You know, if you want to poke a stick in a hornet's nest, which I did not, or I had forgotten, write something about disability retirement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the comments are smoldering. I think there's 10 as of now, and suspect more, but they're all over the place. But it is a very sore subject with a lot of people. And, you know, some people think it's a scam. Some people think it's an entitlement. Some people see it as an absolute necessity, as the ultimate safety net. And people are all over the place with it. I remember some years back, and of course you only hear the bad cases.
Right.
But some years back, an employee took disability retirement from the Postal Service because he couldn't deliver the mail, you know. He was caught later on. I think his photo appeared in the front page of a newspaper. He won the local became in third in the local marathon, but his picture was in the paper. So
mm-hmm.
that, and you know, 60 Minutes is always doing shows about scams, and we hear about Social Security scams and in the government too. But it is a hot topic.
The passion that people have for that comes from what, do you think?
I think. Normally I just glance at the comments, but if there are a lot of them, I figure, boy, something's going on here, so I'd better read them all. And in these columns, my sense is that there are people who wrote in who are on disability, and they resent anybody who implies that there's any waste, fraud, or abuse in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one of them, somebody said something about someone in my office got disability, and there didn't seem to be anything wrong with them. And then this person probably said, "Where did you get your medical degree?"
Yeah.
How do you know? And you know, it's that thing all the way through the theme. Someone said, I think her niece never wanted to work and claimed depression, got disability, now is depressed because the benefits are so low. So she's genuine depressed. But I mean, it's one of those. I think you're on one side or the other. There doesn't seem to be much gray ground to it.
Yeah.
And I recall maybe a year or so ago, you know, Montgomery County, Maryland, and Fairfax County, Virginia, are almost twins.
Mm-hmm.
They're both huge. They're both among the richest in the country. They're in the top 10, if not top 5. Population-wise, the Virginia County is slightly larger, but not much. But I mean, they're you could flip them, and they're so similar. And yet, the police from one jurisdiction have an extremely high disability retirement rate compared to the other county.
Hmm.
And you just got to wonder, is it more dangerous in one place or the other, or are they more lax over this side of the river? Who knows?
It's very interesting. Your column on that is up on federalnewsradio.com. You also have a column up titled Gridlock's Not Such a Dirty Word. And it's a concept that you and I have talked about before, that all of this partisan back and forth is not so awful for the federal workforce.
You know, the other day, and I don't know if it was Politico or The Hill, but it was a learned journal, and they had taken a poll, maybe it was the Pew Research Institute, but somebody who has good creds in this, and they said that the majority of the American people favored gridlock, and that this portended well for Republicans hanging onto the House,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe even making inroads in the Senate. So there are apparently a lot of people out there that agree that gridlock is not necessarily the end of the world.
The gridlock that we see has prevented some things from happening potentially to federal employees that a lot of people wanted to happen.
It could have been so much worse. And I mean, I think that's one reason so many of us, myself included, were surprised at the sequestration and surprised at the furloughs. You know, we thought it was more bluff.
Mm-hmm.
But normally these things do cancel, or often these things do cancel themselves out.
Yeah, I mean, we could have had a chain CPI.
Yep.
That didn't happen. We could have had some of the other things that you and I have talked about.
Yeah,
back
raising
and forth.
The retirement contributions, mm-hmm. and all of that sort of thing. Yeah, it's like they're stamping their foot, and they say, well, if you can't have, I can't have my lollipop, you can't have yours.
Yeah. Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and that column's up on federalnewsradio.com as well. The Big Your Turn show today with my friend and colleague Jason Miller was another good show.
Jason led off. He went through the mysteries of the budget guidance memo that OMB put out.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of those things, you know, I was telling people on the air, because they're not familiar with radio, in the print newspaper business, we measured everything by inches, column inches. And I would do a column that was 24 inches or something. In radio and television, of course, time is everything.
Yes.
So you as you know, I'm explaining to them. But, and my, for instance, my column typically, according to our machine, would take you about 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read my column. This one, the Budget Bureau four-page memo, took 9 minutes, 25 seconds to read.
Oh, dear.
And it is not going to be a dinner table discussion for most people. Very complex stuff. Had a little fun with it.
Yeah.
But Jason does understand it, and he talked about some of the nuances. And he used the three-letter word RIF, reduction in force.
Uh-huh.
He said it's possible that the 2% reduction that's mandated in discretionary spending could lead to reductions in force.
The agencies have talked about ways to, they call it reshape or reposition the workforce.
Yeah.
And I know nobody wants to do RIFs, but at some point in time, I mean, I can't see how you can get past it, because if you have a whole bunch of jobs that you don't need people to do anymore, and the jobs that you need them to do require skills that somebody who's been at the agency for 30 years doesn't have, I'm not sure how you get around that.
You know, the problem with that, the Clinton people went through this. That was the first big round of buyouts that we had. They were aimed at the Defense Department. They were aimed at males who were military veterans. And these are the people that had seniority, and they said, okay, if we run a RIF, a reduction in force, Mike here, I'm an Army veteran, and I'm older, and I've been in the government longer, I will bump down into your job. You're not a veteran, or you haven't been there as long, so I'll take your job. You'll bump someone down. And it's a very messy business, and at the end, you still have to pay people something.
Mm-hmm.
You might try to balance your workforce that way, but what you do is get some aged guy down at a lower level job where he has saved pay.
Mm-hmm.
So his or her salary will continue for indefinitely. So it's a very messy way to run a railroad. Buyouts, of course, are better, but people are now saying $25,000 for most isn't enough after deductions. So yeah, it's a tough thing. And the Clinton people did that because they said they wanted to protect the diversity gains they had made in hiring. You know, a lot of women, a lot of minorities had come on board. Had they run a RIF, they would have all been the first ones out the door. You know, last hired, first fired. They did have some RIFs, even under the Clinton plan, but by and large, they got rid of over 300,000 jobs, 300,000 people, primarily by outsourcing.
Mm-hmm. The possibility for the workforce to get smaller is, well, it's not even a possibility anymore. It's a likelihood at this point. If you have less money, you're going to have fewer dollars to pay people with.
Yeah.
You're going to have to figure out either how you're going to pay the people that you have less, or how you're going to have fewer people so that you don't have to spread the money around as much. It's a math problem.
I sometimes think that we give too much credit to computers and technology and science, because on NCIS, on Criminal Minds, you give some information to usually it's a strange woman, goth type, and she goes on it and in 20 seconds says, oh, here's where Osama bin Laden, he's living in Milwaukee in apartment 2C. Doesn't work that way in real life. And when you look at the number, the American population, over 300 million now, and the federal workforce is at the same levels it's been, it was in the 1940s and 50s. So maybe you do need some more people to handle bigger programs, and we're getting more programs all the time. The entitlements are growing. That's the biggest part of our budget now. Everybody thinks it's defense. It's not. It's other programs. You're not going to take them away. Every politician has a pet program. So when we see these, I mean, I've been through so many of these exercises. I remember one time they were going to freeze all hiring. Fine. No exceptions. And they said, well, what about defense? And they said, oh, yeah, of course, defense has got to keep hiring people. Well, that's half the government right there.
Right.
And then somebody said, what about the Postal Service? Oh, yeah, well, the mail's got to go through. What about IRS? Oh, yeah, I've got to collect taxes. And they whittled it down to where in the end there were it was easier to count the agencies that were under the freeze than those that weren't. And
no hiring at the Battle Monument Commission.
Exactly. My favorite example, the American Battle Monuments Commission, a solid freeze.